Welcome to this special episode of Frequency Matters, the R for Microwave Update series. I'm Pat Hindle. I'm here with my co-host, Gary LaRude. Today, we are taking a look at a huge issue in 4 and 5G networks, which is power consumption. 5G networks will continue to use OFDM modulation, which has a high peak-to-average power ratio, and that forces amplifiers to operate in a less efficient mode. But a new startup called Spectral DSP says they've solved this issue. So today we're talking with Dr. Fred Harris, professor of University of California, San Diego, and Pete Wassel, president and CEO of Spectral DSP. Welcome, guys.
How you doing?
Using Spectral DSP algorithms, it is estimated that an 800-watt power amplifier could be replaced with a 120-watt amplifier, reducing power consumption by up to 670%. So Spectral DSP was founded to solve the inefficient OFDM high peak to average power ratio energy usage issues that limit the efficiency of power amplifiers. So can you explain why this is the case for most communication systems used today?
Yes, I can. It's not only for communications used today, all communications are facing that problem. In the early days of satellite communications for television signals, each satellite had a 30 megahertz bandwidth, and they used it to modulate what used to be NTSC, National Television Standards Committee, TV signals, which were 6 megahertz wide. But because they were concerned about efficiency of the power amplifiers, they insisted that the modulation had to be constant envelope. So all of these satellite repeaters up in space were doing wideband FM modulation. And the wideband modulation made the problem go away. It was very inefficient use of the bandwidth, but making the envelope be a constant allowed them to get them right up to the edge of saturation and still get a broadband signal into and out of space in a bent pipe. So that was one of the standard ones. In the early days of satellite communications, the navies fell in love with it because a satellite could connect with a ship at sea. And in the early days, it was expensive to launch satellites. So what they launched was low Earth orbit satellites, which basically moved around the planet in very quick orbits. And you put a lot of them up there, and as you moved across the sky and lost that satellite, another one would pop up on the other side and you would pick it up. All low Earth orbit satellites are phase modulated signals, and they're phase modulated signals for exactly the same reason. If power is so expensive in space that the only justification for using any other wave shape is not related to economics, it's related to some other criterion, but economics would always drive you to constant envelope. I do some work now with the Navy lab, and all the low Earth orbit satellites and all these CubeSats are all phase modulated signals. And phase modulated signals have the advantage, constant envelope, they have the disadvantage, it's a poor use of the spectrum. Doesn't matter if it's a poor use of the spectrum. It keeps the batteries alive. And the reason it happens that PAPR is a problem is a central limit theorem. The central limit theorem says, if you give me the sum of a large number of independent random variables, the sum will be Gaussian. Now, if you do this on both X and Y, because you have in-phase and quadrature, you have a Gaussian envelope on the real part, you have a Gaussian envelope on the imaginary part. And when you put them together, what you have is a really distributed envelope. And this really distributed envelope has this long tail. And that tail is what you have to get rid of or control to make the power amplifiers efficient. Now, one of the questions that was asked is, how does the technique that we have proposed? What we did is we designed a different signal. And the different signal avoids the central limit theorem by clever distribution of how the signal is assembled. So one of my specialties is designing signals. I design signals for various companies. I design signals for various agencies. And designing signals, we have peak power limited or power limited sources, is an art. And that's what I do for a living.
So if we look at the contrast, you talked about how precious power is on the satellite. And clearly, it seems like the cellular industry was more interested in spectral efficiency rather than power. Although now, as we look at wide-scale deployment of 5G, power becomes a lot more of a critical factor. Tell us more about how spectral DSP addresses the problem that the cellular industry has found itself in.
Well, years and years ago, I did some work for a company in San Diego called Anthropic. And we built a 500 megahertz wide OFDM system. And the Anthropic system has a name, I forgot what it's called, but we use the fact, in fact, one of my graduate students was crawling around in his attic, laying down wideband cables in his attic. And he, in San Diego, that's a hard thing to do because it's summertime all the time. And he looked around and says, you know, there are cables all over my attic, and these cables are the cables distributing TV to my house. Those cables can be used to distribute signals around my house. And what we did is we designed a modem which used the top 500 megahertz of those cables that the TV companies were delivering up to 500 meg signals. But above 500 meg, it was free. So we decided to harvest that unused spectral band. And we built 500 meg OFDM systems. We learned a lot about cable TV, incidentally. And in that time, everyone had videotape recorders. And videotape recorders had to sync to their videotape recorder to the signal source. And if the signal source was shifted in frequency due to age or temperature, or mainly temperature, they had to search for it. And in the process of searching through the spectrum, they generated spectral lines which spilled into the 500 meg that we were using. So we had to learn how to suppress interference from neighbors who didn't even know we were around. But we were pretty good at it. We learned how to build amazing signals. And one of the systems problems we ran into is when we built the integrated circuits for this 500 meg OFDM, the power amplifier had such large swings, you couldn't put the power amplifier on the same chip. So when it came time to build the chip, we had all the modulators, all the demodulators, and a separate chip, which we had to glue on with a different power supply just because of the PAPR. So that's when I learned to say, PAPR is a problem. And we solved it. We knew how to solve that problem. And we solved it by eventually using Chiofi's trick up at Stanford, which was the reserve bins. But that got me thinking, is, are there other ways of solving this problem? And in fact, there are a number of very useful ways. Two or three of them are useful, and all the rest are sort of make-believe. Desperation of people trying to get a PhD thesis done. And when you look at it, you say, oh, come on, they know better than that. But they didn't, because they're not signal processing folks. They're computer science folks. And the computer science folks think, oh, I have a computer, I can solve problems. You have to know signal processing to solve the problems that they're trying to solve. And we happen to be pretty good at that.
So what kind of improvements in energy efficiency and range can be realized from this technology? And how does it compare to using, you know, DPD and envelope tracking algorithms, which do increase efficiency?
In fact, I worked with Chris Dick at Xilinx. He had a group whose only function was to build pre-distortion for wideband power amplifiers. And Chris told me something interesting. Anytime they change the material in a power amplifier, let's say they go from silicon to gallium arsenide or gallium nitride, as soon as they change material, the algorithms don't work anymore. They have to start over again. And in fact, what Xilinx had to do is purchase every single power amplifier made in the country and then design a pre-distortion amplifier, a pre-distortion algorithm, only for that amplifier. Could not be used in a different amplifier. And the reason they did it, it was a great income source for Xilinx. In fact, that was one of their biggest sources of income. And Chris was always asking for, can you send me some people? And he would have to look in places that you wouldn't expect to find programmers who understood both RF and signal processing to learn how to build the pre-distortion for any particular amplifier. One of the problems is the problem gets worse and worse and worse as the bandwidth goes up. We did some work for a company called PowerWave, and PowerWave used to build cell sites. And one of the things they used to do is do control of spectral regrowth in the power amplifiers. And they did it by a different trick. What they did is they built the power amplifier, they compared the output signal to the input signal, it took the difference after you do some gain adjustment. Well, the difference of the two is the distortion. So what they did, they now had a copy of the distortion. So they amplified the distortion and added it to the output of the power amplifier with opposing polarity. So they did canceling. Great little trick. So we designed some broadband systems for them. They got more and more difficult to do as the bandwidth got bigger and bigger. And that's true of any pre-distortion, and it's also true of envelope tracking. Envelope tracking works great. Give me a megahertz worth of bandwidth. Give me 20 megahertz worth of bandwidth, it's not going to do well. Give me 50 megahertz, it's not going to do well at all. So broadband systems have delays in them, and delays don't work well when you have a broadband system. The signal changes are faster than the delays in the correction for the changes. So what we did is said, let's just change the signal. We know what is the problem. The problem is the center limit theorem. Let's build signals that avoid the superposition of multiple signals at the same time, at the same place. And that's it. You simply build a collection of signals which avoid stacking signals on top of each other. And we know how to do that. We're pretty good at it.
And so you take the information from those other signals and put them in different places, you bend them. And so what is the downfall? The only sacrifice is a little bit of bandwidth?
You have to trade bandwidth. Well, first of all, you do the initial modulation. And the initial modulation does a pretty good job of reducing the PAPR by about a half. So that's a pretty good start all by itself. But now if you want to get more than a 2-to-1 reduction in PAPR, then you have to spend bandwidth, which is what Chiofi figured out. What Chiofi figured out is the bandwidth you spend is in band. That if you give me 20 megahertz worth of bandwidth, 10% of the in-band energy won't be used for modulation. It'll be used for canceling the undesired peaks. So you have to spend bandwidth somewhere. You either spend bandwidth inside your modulation, or you have a choice. You can put some bandwidth outside the normal modulation bandwidth. And you have a knob to turn. And as you turn the knob and spend a little bit of extra bandwidth, you can get significant reductions in PAPR. So by turning the knob, you can answer the question, who's more valuable to me, bandwidth or a range in terms of the output of my power amplifier? And depending upon what the time of the day when the amount of energy you need and the amount of range that you need, it changes because you have different uses of the system. Late at night and early in the business day, the rules are different in how you allocate bandwidth and range. But you can now do this dynamically and pick the best of which you need to do for the particular task at hand.
So how will you implement this elegant approach in the current deployment of base stations and cell phones?
Aha. Well, we have to get some partners. And that's what we're out looking for, partners to help us. What we did is we recognized no one is going to buy anything if you haven't demonstrated that it works. So we spent a fair amount of money and time and resources where we actually built up a working system. And the working system had both a modulator and a demodulator to show, look, we predicted this is what was going to happen, and it happened. Now what we want to do is build a bigger platform, larger bandwidth, and really start throwing at the problem.
Yeah, what we did was we tested on the platforms for advanced wireless research. So a number of different universities participate in that program, one being Columbia University. It's the Cosmos system under Gil Zussman. And the second one is the Orbit Lab. And that's with Ivan Seskar is the director of that program. So we loaded up the transmission software and the receiver software on SDRs. We had used National Instruments, the 210 EDIS board, and we conducted all the tests, and lo and behold, the results matched Dr. Fred's hypothesis on the efficient PAPR. So the hardware results matched what we saw in the simulation in MATLAB. So that was extremely encouraging. And now essentially we're talking with companies, I won't mention the names, but let's just say one is in Sweden and one is in South Korea, where we'll be testing the software on their equipment. Because we want, at the end of the day, what we want to do is ensure that this application works on various hardware, as opposed to the generalized generic hardware that we had tested on.
Oh, excellent. That was going to be my next question. So you answered that perfectly. And so what is your timeline then, do you think, to fielding systems?
You know, it's a good question. We've had our initial discussions with these companies, and they are highly interested. I'll mention why they're interested. If you look at some of these programs, in the US, there's EPRI, like Electrical Power Research Institute. The international one is IEA, the International Energy Agency. That one's based out of France. They all have a number of carbon reduction initiatives where they lay out by country, by year, where they want to get to a more neutral place. And, you know, while we can pitch or sell this solution as an extended distance, more coverage kind of applications, it can also be, on the flip side, a reduced power consumption solution. So for those reasons, there's companies that are pretty interested in this. Some of the numbers are significant, what the telcos are spending on electricity. It's pretty big numbers, but it's somewhere in the area of 5 to 6%, right, of their funds goes to electricity. And so, these companies are interested. For a timeline, they'll often spend 6 months realistically, because they have to test on their base equipment, the equipment that's in the field, the equipment that's coming out in this year, the improved equipment. And then they'll do a small market segment. They'll do, you know, they'll start on one base station, one antenna, then they move to a certain geography in a small market. They do that kind of testing because they want to ensure everything works perfectly, you know, before rolling out nationwide. So there is a process, and it could be 6 to 8 months on either one of those companies that we've started talking to.
Well, that's very encouraging. And certainly, as we're seeing in the world, there's much more emphasis on making systems more efficient, reducing power consumption, trying to reduce greenhouse gases. So it looks like the approach that you're taking to try to have a major impact on the base station and wireless infrastructure is right in line with where the industry needs to go over the next decade. So we thank you, Pete, and Dr. Fred, for explaining your theory and also Spectral DSP's approach to reducing energy consumption in the wireless network. And we are watching your progress. We hope you'll give us an update from time to time as you make progress.
Absolutely.
And thanks everyone for watching Frequency Matters, where we have interesting conversations with the people and the companies that are enabling the wireless world.